It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're right in front of me again.
Yes, I am. Believe it or not, I am here back from the dead. I've risen from my crypt once more to join the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. Sorry, that's how you pronounce it, right? It's been so long.
P. Yeah, that's the thing. It's changed over the last few months. No one else knows how to do a chorus of UBPs other than us because no one else would be weird enough to set it in motion in the first place. But it's been a long time. It's been about a month or so. How's everything been? How's life on the Future Game Show coast?
It is good, but very, very busy, my friend. I'm in constant meetings about new and exciting projects, which is fantastic because it means that obviously new and exciting content comes out, but my lord, do we have to make sure that there's a lot of crossed T's and dotted I's for all of this stuff. So yeah, it can be a bit stressful, but at the same time, I'm having a great time over there. And if people want to see some of the fun I've been making, go over to the Future Game Show or FGS, where I do my weekly list stuff, which focuses on deep cuts. So games you've probably never heard of, or at least very, very old retro games.
Also, you're going to be at Gamescom. Just a little cheeky plug before we get into everyone's questions.
You're going to be at Gamescom. It's going to be weird because I'm going to be there. I'm going to be doing content. And then we've got the Future Game Show showcase, which is going to be a load of games being previewed live there as well. So there may be a little snippet of yours truly involved in that as well. So,
mate, if you meet Troy Baker, I'm going to do a little wee.
Well, that may happen, mate. It may happen.
But yeah, but this is the Intel Partner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP, taking everyone's questions, thoughts, whatever's going on in the industry. First question from your done messed up Aaron, who says, legend. Howdy y'all. Welcome back to Jules, loving the new Future Game Show content. In honor of the Egg Daddy's return, how do you like your eggs? Scrambled over easy, quiche, toad in the hole, etc.
Oh man, toad in the hole, that takes me right back, that does. Because toad in the hole, basically, for those who live across the pond, it's basically when your family just goes like, we've got a lot of stuff left over from this Sunday dinner. Or this Christmas meal, shall we just chuck it into a big thing? Chuck a load of like expanding Yorkshire pudding-esque foam.
It'll just fill a tray and then just out like, at some point.
That's it. We're done. And then chuck a few sausages in there. Done. We're done.
Did you have? Do you have Bubble and Squeak?
Yeah, oh, that's maybe what I'm thinking of. Bubble and Squeak is the leftover thing, isn't it? Yeah,
I think it's similar though. It's the same like principle, but the idea of categorizing toad in the hole as a type of egg is definitely a choice. I'm going scrambled every day, all day long.
I mean, scrambled is good, and unfortunately for me, being a vegan, I've only got an option of tofu as my choice. So I either have it in blocked or scrambled. Or would you like your egg in a cube?
Would you like a slab of egg?
But you know what? Thanks to you can get this pink Himalayan salt or black salt, which basically makes everything taste like egg because it's like sulfur salt. It's incredible, dude. It's really, really good.
What's the weirdest thing you've comboed it with to turn it into an egg?
So the way that I make my eggs, and there's heavy quotation marks over that, it's with, so you've got to break up the tofu first, you've got to drain it, and then you've got to mix in this sulfur salt, then you've got to get some mustard, some mayonnaise, some paprika, and some chili flakes, and some salt and pepper, and you just get it all together, get it going in the mix. Tiny bit of red wine vinegar, if you want a bit of an acidic spring to it, and then
if you're feeling
garnish.
Fancy.
Garnish and serve, mate. Garnish and serve.
It feels like that's a very deluxe meal to put together. We're just fancying a few eggs on the side.
That's just how I have to live, mate. This is because otherwise it's just because you've got to put turmeric in it as well to give it the sort of colouring of egg. Because if you don't, you're just left with this very unappealing slop. It kind of reminds me, you know, when in that scene of The Matrix where they're like,
it's got
everything the grown body needs. All I can think of whenever I'm eating some eggs, if they don't have the right colouring, is I got to eat this goddamn goop every day.
We're still like that, do you ever think you would just take food as long as it stimulated your brain and made it taste like whatever you want? Would you just take any texture as long as your brain made it taste like a beef dinner
When you know those new air drinks that have come out at the moment, where it's the scent that goes. Have you seen this?
So no,
what
no.
it is it's like a, it's a little nozzle that sits over a bottle of water, and what it does is that when you drink it, it like puffs out a scented air, and it convinces your brain that you're tasting water that is that same flavor. But what drinking is just water, so you're just inhaling in this smell, and it's confusing the senses. So you can feel
like that or not.
Like you're like, oh, I think I'm drinking. Some like pink lemonade, but instead I'm actually just drinking water. It's just crazy how it can fool the brain into doing it. So that if they can do that for food, sign me up for the cud farm, mate. I'll eat whatever. Like a Soylent Green, it's people. Yeah, whatever, dude. It tastes like brisket.
Yeah, like a slop pile, but it just tastes like your favorite. It just tastes like McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's spray. Yeah,
I mean, you have described McDonald's with the slop pile.
I'll always take a good slop pile. That feels like something that the AI overlords will take control of and convince us that we're all satisfied, but while they algorithmically deliver us perfect content for the rest of our lives.
Hey, man, look, I'm not saying that this has already happened in many aspects of life in itself, but let's just say that people suffer through a lot and will continue suffering worse and worse, and people at the top will just be like, oh my God, they're putting up with it? Fantastic. Oh, amazing.
We can get away with this?
Yeah.
Question from Honest NPC, who says, hope you awesome dudes are doing well. What game would you like to see be an anime series next? I would love a Soul Reaver in the Castlevania anime style. Metal Gear Solid or Silent Hill could be awesome if done well. Thanks for the podcast.
Okay, so you just wanted your question noticed by Scott, because you were just like, okay, what's Scott going to be looking over in the questions? Oh, Soul Reaver, yeah, that'll be it, done.
Just laser eyes, laser focus.
To be fair, I would prefer to have Legacy of Kain over Soul Reaver. If we're going to do the anime version, like tell his story first and lead into Soul Reaver, because it makes no sense to not understand the villain or the fallen anti-hero is Kain.
That's actually an incredible point, because you need to open on human Kain becomes like, you know, his whole rise to becoming the lord of like the vampires or whatever in Nosgoth, and then you tease Raziel at the end of season one something.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, they could go all the way through all the Defiance stuff and they fight each other in season three. That thing would be really, really cool. There's also Scott Dogg, who messaged in saying that he's trying to will an F-Zero anime series into existence.
Gasp!
Will we join him?
I got a gasp out of me.
Willing it to be. I think an F-Zero, that's Captain Falcon, right? That's like a whole...
Yeah.
Is that something else? Yeah. Well, you could do a whole Captain Falcon thing.
The thing is that I keep telling you this, and I think you keep agreeing, that the best thing about the Star Wars Episode 1 film was the pod racing segment. And
yes,
we were saying about how there should just be a pod racing film. Like, the same principle applies to an F-Zero film. Have it focus on a down and out racing team competing against the sort of like the underhive and villainy that is the sort of a corrupt corporations that are there, all fighting together. It gets violent on the track, and then all of a sudden Falcon Punch, he comes to save the day. fantastic stuff.
That could be the next He-Man. I feel like I would back the idea of doing a Castlevania style Legacy of Kain across multiple seasons. The thing is, I kind of want it already exists, but I want a new version of the Devil May Cry anime, or just more Capcom stuff.
Good. Enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's like there's the Nier anime. I know that's like in Platinum or whatever, but it's like action games lend themselves very well to being anime stuff. It's like you could do a Shovel Knight one or something like that. But I feel like the Legacy game would be sweet.
If you did Shovel Knight, then that would be perfect for that sort of episodic format of just like a nice, vibrant cartoon that you just go like, look, Shovel Knight and his pals, they're on an adventure. They go and meet like this guy this week. Oh, it's this guy. They call him the knight to help them out. Oh, it's this guy. Hey, and he's like, hey, I'm that guy. Hey, yo, what's up? so that could work really well. I would love to see, because obviously with the cyberpunk anime, we got a real understanding of how quality animation and a really interesting premise can combine to make something truly memorable and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think that let's apply that to other games that maybe you wouldn't think go hand in hand like that. I love the sort of neo-noir aesthetics, and maybe why don't we apply it to the what's it called, Jet Set Radio Future. Imagine that. Because obviously Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is coming out this month, I'm pretty sure. And so it's on my brain at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's like next week or something. I feel like it's because it's by the original composer. I forget the dude's name, but they got the Jet Set composer back. It should be sweet. Yeah, I feel like overall, most studios are realizing they don't need to bother with the live action adaptations. They can just do an anime version, and that's way closer in terms of the cinematography or whatever, or the possibilities to like a game anyway.
Just think about what it allows you to do, because like where have the Resident Evil films and animated bits failed? Mm-hmm. They've failed a lot on trying to make these video game elements seem real within a real world. And then our brain is just like, no, it doesn't look right because it's not... It doesn't look cohesive, or the special effects aren't up to par, or it just is that we can tell you're not interacting with anything. Whereas in an animated, either 3D or hand-drawn, you end up with that thing where everything is the same. It's on the same field of existence, so it feels tangible, even though it's not directly related to our reality. Like, yeah, I would love to see a hand-drawn Resident Evil 1 retelling. That would be amazing.
Ooh, I would do like a more like, I don't know if you'd do like an inky kind of art style. Well, I don't know, maybe it's like, too stylish.
Do you remember when Pokemon Origins came out and they did short little snippets just showing chapters of the entire adventure? Imagine just doing 5-minute chapters of the Resident Evil 1 game, just really key highlights of the whole thing. Like you wouldn't have to make it into a full-fledged 20-minute episode. Just do it short, exciting, exhilarating pieces because people will watch those short movies over and over and over again.
Dude, if you did like a vignette approach where you have like Wesker's perspective or like Jill's great, perspective actually. Or whatever,
yeah, there
and
you
then
go.
Like slowly thread it together, and you like maybe people who don't know the story would like slowly realize the truth about Wesker as it
That's
comes
a
together.
Great idea, yeah, yeah.
Thank you. That would be good fun. Have you seen the new animated Resident Evil thing, that Death Island thing?
No, I got put off it straight away because even though I like the idea of having the whole cast together, I didn't like that it was like let's just wheel out the golden oldies because we're clearly like bereft of any actual original ideas and. That one
the Avengers tentacle
they
shot.
Kept on trying to do where it was like all of the female protagonists were like jumping over the tentacle that was sliding. And I remember just watching it going like, yes, you have all got them together in one shot, but they're not doing anything. And we're just literally just like, it's jangling the keys in front of the face going, look, we've got this. Remember this. Remember this. We got this.
We did the obvious easy thing. We did the thing that hopefully makes it look like we've got some soul.
Yeah.
Question from Kevin, who says, hello, legends. Glad to see Jules' return. I'm a console boy and Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield come out on the same day, as does Mario Wonder and Spider-Man 2 later in the year. How do you guys prioritize which game to play first in these kinds of situations?
That is a really tough one, isn't it? Because it's like you're almost inhibited by choice. There's too many good things coming out at once and all of them require so much attention and time. Mm-hmm. So what I usually do is I try and break up a AAA game with a shorter indie experience. So for example, because Blasphemous 2 is on the horizon and is coming out fairly soon, I went back and played the original Blasphemous, but now I'm ready for like a big AAA meaty game to sort of go like, oh, I completed one thing. I feel good about myself. Now let's invest in something like Baldur's Gate 3 or maybe even going back in time to play one of the many, many very long games that I have got just sitting there on my shelf. I mean, how do you find it, Scott?
I just feel like I run sort of like bare-chested, arms behind my back into all of this and then just see how I fall. But I definitely, it depends. In this case, like if I talk about, if it's Baldur's Gate versus Starfield, then oh my God, it's probably Starfield. It's always just on the day. What am I going to actually do? I agree with your thing overall of splitting up. Like I view games as like bridging games between the bigger releases, like multiplayer stuff as a bridge to something else or something that has like short rounds or whatever it is. So I was wondering maybe why I would do a few levels of Mario Wonder and then Spider-Man, but I feel like the story pull of Spidey is too big. They're really hard decisions because, I mean, Baldur's Gate is blowing the F up right now, so I want to know what the hell the deal with that game is. And starting two RPGs at the same time is definitely going to be hard. I think in this case, I would do Starfield because it's the next Bethesda, and then I would do Spidey because I just need to know how that game opens.
Yeah, the thing is that like if you start something and stop, get enchanted by another game and then go back, there's a good chance that you'll have forgotten what was going on and maybe it won't have the same impact going into it, because I know I've done this many times because I love the Fallout franchise, so I always find myself dipping into them again and again and again. And I've always known most of the quests that are going on, so I know where I'm going. But half the time when I go back to it, I want to start from scratch again because of the fact I go like, I can't remember what I was doing here or what the aim of this playthrough was.
The curse of the open world game.
But I guess I'll just start again. I end up doing the same thing again and again and again. It's like doomed to fail because I'll get to the same point, realize that I quit for a reason. Either it was just a boring bit or I'd maxed out a certain thing and I was like, oh, well, there's no fun in this anymore. And then just go, oh, off to something else. Then come back to it and be like, why was I playing this again? Better start again. Do the exact same thing.
Oh my God. I'm in that. It's like a time loop. I'm in that with Fallout New Vegas. I've never finished New Vegas.
And the funny thing is that I know that there's people probably listening to this being like, oh, oh, Jules, you idiot, just see something through to the end. And I'll just remind them of every single sports game fan who just goes like, hey, look, I'm going to take Wales FC to the top of the Premier League. I don't know if Wales FC even exists. Up to the top of the Premier League. And then it resets next year. Oh, well, I guess I'm going to take Wales FC to the top of the Premier League. It's like yeah, the repetitious cycle of content. It's just like, well done, you reached the top. Now do it again.
See, this whole, that thing of, ultimately you have two big games that are both as deserving of your time. I'm taking this question as, what am I going to play first? Like, yeah, the literal first few moments. Do you tend to then go one game at a time? Because I don't. I bounce between the two.
Oh, unless, I know you don't, man.
Oh, I do. But unless, something really gets me on the story and then I just can't put it down, I need to know what's happening next, which I think will happen with Spidey.
Yeah.
And because Mario is on Switch, that'll kind of be a train game. So I'm going to be playing Spidey alongside Mario, playing Mario on the way in to and from work kind of thing.
Well, the thing is I know I'm going to play Spidey first just because of the fact that the first one, when it came out, I managed to breeze through it in maybe 4 or 5 days, collecting everything, just exploring, having a good time at my own pace. And if this is more of the same and can be bashed out in a week, with the collectibles being as fun and interesting to explore, then I don't see it as being as long as Starfield. So I do feel I'll just be like, oh, I'll be able to get this out of the way, as bad as that sounds. It's not what I mean. Just being able to play through this game before jumping into something that will be, in theory, endless.
Yeah, we did have a question as well, and I apologize for not finding the name of the person who sent it in, but it was talking about how changing general gaming habits as content creators or coverers of the games industry makes you think of games that way, where you're like, okay, I can get through this in a couple of days, then I can get onto this, then I can do this, and not letting that sort of take over everything, not letting that devalue the thing that you're getting through.
But you know what? It shows that there's actually a different requirement for your job versus mine, because when... the way that you see it is that you've got to play everything new that comes out so that you can stand there and give information about these new games. And I totally respect that, because it's a real commitment.
We used to do a lot more of that, yeah.
But because I'm much more of a passive gamer, I like watching YouTube playthroughs, I like watching breakdowns of old games that I've not played, and I do a lot of Twitch reviewing as well. So it's a case of, I actually argue that I experience the game as much as the person playing it, and I have the added reaction of being able to watch somebody else enjoy it and get that sort of passive emotion off of them as well. So in theory, I've not played nearly 75% of the most modern games, but I have watched full playthroughs, breakdowns, lore deep dives, everything about them, so I know them probably better than people who played them through that way.
Ooh,
and it's
that's
taken
an interesting
me far
quandary.
Less time to do that than it has done to play through 90 hours of one game.
Right. I definitely think playing through the thing is the ultimate way to experience
I know that that's the whole point of video games. It is the medium you're there to play it. But my sort of enjoyment levels are sometimes more watching somebody play through something that I have personally no interest slogging all the way through. Now, I'll hold up my hands, and I know this will probably get a lot of hate. Final Fantasy 16. I don't have a PS5 at the moment, and I know that everyone loves it and everyone's been talking about it. So what I've been doing is I've been just sort of jumping into other people's streams, checking out different chapters and stuff like that. And I've learned that there are some elements of that game that I would absolutely love to play through, but there is also a lot of other elements that I'd be like, nah, I cannot be arsed doing what you're doing here with all these fetch quests. So I get to skip all of the doldrum and enjoy all of the spectacle and boss battles and crazy sort of plot twists. And I feel like I'm as much of the audience as I am the driver, because I'm choosing which content I'm picking from.
That's one of the, we should obviously open that up to the people can message in or whatever. Another question tweet next week and stuff. But yeah, that idea of checking out a game through streaming or through video rather than playing it, watching a playthrough. I did that for Detroit Become Human. It's the only game I ever did that for because I just refused to give David Cage any money. But I just want to watch this thing. So I did that. But obviously by doing that, you're not playing through the different perspectives of those characters. So when you have to make those decisions about who lives or dies or whatever, it didn't mean anything to me. I didn't have any actual agency in it. But that it is interesting with the rise of playthroughs and the availability of them, because I do know plenty of people who sit and watch a game through, like my own sister-in-law does and things like that. So it is a rise. It has become a rise of the video playthrough to just watch that. And like you said, when you're mentioning there's parts that you'd like and parts that you don't, the people who have played through it, like me or Josh or whoever, still came out with the same thing. I absolutely love 16, but all the fetch quest stuff was definitely not, Josh didn't like that stuff at all.
Yeah.
And that you still touched on the same shared negative regardless.
But, which and is now it's funny because you and I could have a chat about Final Fantasy 16 and I would know what's going on. I'd know what the characters do. I'd know the boss battles. I'd know all of this. I'd know some strategies about this. I know, and therefore like, just because I haven't experienced it firsthand does not mean that I haven't gained a lot of enjoyment and understanding and appreciation for the game by watching it passively. The only thing, the only people that should be annoyed about this, because remember, there is no wrong way to enjoy a video game, are probably Square Enix that are like, God damn it, why didn't you buy it? Because apparently,
yeah, there is that.
Apparently, Final Fantasy VI was a huge failure again, just like bloody Deus Ex was when they put that out. We, as I say many times before, listeners at home, we are not here to pick up your checks.
Like, no, the,
like, if you chose to spend that amount of money on that game, that's on you. Like,
Square Enix's, I mean, when Figma 16 launched, they were like, oh, it's a record-breaking success.
I know. So, whatever, and like, then but it wasn't enough of a record-breaking success. It's like, guys, get a grip, man. Like, what are you doing? This gives me that energy of, like, do you remember when, I think it was Atari, they made more copies of the, I can't remember which game it was, it might have been E.T., than there were Atari consoles in circulation, because they thought, their thinking was, is that people would enjoy the game that much that they would buy a copy for somebody else who didn't have the console to encourage them to buy the console.
Like, as if that was with that, as that game came together, or barely came together, they should have, in theory, realized that, as it was just barely a single sprite moving around the screen. But yeah, that's an interesting conversation. If people want to chime in on, like, the times that they've watched games rather than played them, or if they still feel like they're part of a community, or they are part of a community without actually playing through it, because I think that's an interesting distinction. Question from the 222nd gunner of 2023: what's the best game controller of all time? This is a hotly debated topic amongst my friend groups, and I have to let you guys weigh in. My pick is the PlayStation 4 DualSense. Sorry, DualShock. I like the chunky new PlayStation controllers. I think they're, for me, they're like the ultimate controller. It fits nice in the hand. It's got nice mouth feel. I'm a big fan.
See, the thing is that
one size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
If you go in on classic controllers, you've got to look at the one that gives the total functionality without there being any faff. Like, immediately the Mega Drive controller goes out because three buttons and that sort of thing, weird, just doesn't feel right.
Two rows of threes.
Boomerang shape, it's just odd. Then you've got, like, the NES controller is perfect in the sense of it's got those directions there, but obviously didn't allow for that. So, I don't know.
SNES is pretty close, though.
You keep going and evolving, and at certain points you just start looking at it and going, well, we're not evolving, we're just adding and removing, like, incidental pieces. And I think that evolutionary peak was hit with the Xbox 360 controller because that offered amazing feedback, great trigger systems on the back there. All the buttons just felt right to use. The thumbsticks felt in the right place as well.
Like, I was going to say, where do you come down on staggering the joysticks or having them in line?
See, I actually quite like having them stagger because the thumb being up and over the left-hand side of the controller feels more natural than having them both together down at the center where the PS3 and PS2 controllers were. So, I don't know.
Which is weird, isn't it? Because it's not, if you just put your hands in front of you, they're going to line up.
Like, yeah, it's very odd. I mean, even in terms of use, the Switch controls are really good as well. When they're not drifting, they're amazing.
They're not making so the game is unplayable. Yeah, I like the feel of the Switch in my hand. I think if I just go off like the feel of the controller, I like the bulkiness of the DualSense, the PS5 one, or the PS4 one.
But why did they choose the PS4, not the PS5? Isn't the PS5 one a straight-up improvement over the PS4
I mean,
because
it's
of the
bigger.
Haptic feedback on the triggers. Isn't that like really important for some gamers?
I like that stuff. I mean, I guess maybe they don't like the overall, because it is it's still a bigger controller. I do think the DualShock is awesome. The PS4 one, but I mean, yeah, I have a soft spot for the original Xbox. Not the Duke. I love the dinner plate Duke. That thing's awesome. But the little small one they did, the Xbox.
Oh,
it was called
S.
The Xbox
S
or something.
Yeah, that was it.
I really like that one. It's just that I don't think it holds up because you've got like what is ostensibly L1 and R1 underneath the face buttons because the black and white buttons
they
are
did. Yeah,
put
yeah.
there. But like it's interesting going across stuff from the 2000s as everybody tried to figure out like the optimum layout for everything. And like you said, the 360 was pretty much it, and then the DualShock is kind of right next to it.
I think that
they're nigh enough the same.
The Series S and X controller that's out now, the clickiness of the top shoulder buttons and the nice feel of the triggers, that's a winner for me as well. Absolutely love
it. People love that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the newest Xbox controllers, but that clickiness thing puts me off. I don't want to be distracted by noise from the controller when I'm trying to play.
I don't know, it feels satisfying. It's like that whole idea of like you are moving an element and something is happening, even if it's just like a mental thing, because it's an electronic signal at the end of the day. In your mind, it feels like you're shoving something into place and you are having direct impact control.
Yeah, like we're both old enough to know the feel of tape players, like the chunky buttons and like clicking them in and like sort of like the tactility of that. And it's like same with the GameCube controller, the big like squishy buttons and stuff. Yeah. Like some of that was a bit too Fisher Price, but there was a way for that curved shoulder button or whatever. Like there was like a feel to that. So tactility of a controller is definitely a big feature to it as well. A question from Jack Asbury. This is all stuff to do with Red Dead and Rockstar and them tripping over their own shoelaces across the week. I don't know if you saw that stuff this week.
Yes, yeah.
Right. So, just stuff like that. Jack Asbury saying that across the last few podcasts, myself, Josh, and Cy talked about what it might be like if Shigeru Miyamoto left Nintendo. I believe Rockstar is exactly what would happen. This idea of the main creatives leave or the main people who were speaking out against the money-hungry decisions. Not that Nintendo aren't very money-hungry, but I still feel like there's a creative through line there that at least I would attribute to the likes of Miyamoto.
Agree,
stuff like that. Willie Araya saying, do you think GTA 6 will live up to the hype? GTA Online has changed the meaning of what a GTA is to Rockstar. Mm. And now you have a split fan base wanting opposite things from the same game. How, for the love of Jules, can they keep delivering? There's also Shane / Mr. Blobby 46 saying, oh, Rockstar off their proverbial rocker. £50 for a basic edition of a game from over 10 years ago with no real updates or upgrades. Is it grubby money hungriness, or is there another less offensive reason in our humble opinions? What do you think of all the Rockstar Fallout stuff?
Well, let's take a look at where Rockstar is now. They are one of the most lucrative companies going at the moment. They are making money hand over fist. Still to this day, GTA 5 still in the top sellers of most game charts. It's unbelievable how well that game is still selling this far on. But in terms of creative decisions, they keep making ones that are almost morally bereft, in my opinion, because you've got that GTA Ultimate Collection that came out, the HD remasters that were just terrible ports of games that were handled with zero care. That is an expression what Rockstar thinks of its audience, that you will buy anything, because unfortunately what they have seen is that their audience will buy anything because of what their sales figures are showing for GTA 5 and GTA Online. So when that comes out, where are we actually at in this situation now? That trilogy came out. It has not been fixed. It has not been patched. Nothing has been happening, but and Rockstar would all but sweep it under the rug if it weren't for people like us bringing it up and being like, do you remember that this happened? It's unfortunately the very quick nature of the internet that we get so irate about something and completely forget about it next week. But that they deserves to be to be held up again and say, look, why should we trust you with the future of video games when you can't even handle the past? And if you're constantly recorrecting it and making it worse, then you're basically just saying to us, well, we are going to squirt out the least amount of effort possible and there is going to be next to no single player content that you A, don't either pay for or B, won't be tied intrinsically to GTA Online.
That's kind of the thing, the nexus point for them is that, like, from my perspective, like, someone who, like, grew up loving all of Rockstar's stuff, especially, obviously, the GTA trilogy, but Bully and the Warriors, and even Table Tennis, I'll throw that in there as well. I love that whole run was great. Very much spearheaded by the Housers, Dan and Sam Hauser, and you've also got Leslie Benzies and Laszlo Jones in there as well. They've all left. Like, obviously, Sam is still there, and he was more so, apparently, the money guy anyway. Mm-hmm. So it seems like he's kind of stuck around. But they are at, like, a nexus point where they had this insane creative run, all these various projects, and those people just fundamentally aren't there anymore. And so I wonder, do they just give in and just become the GTA Online company? Because at the minute, the only person who's remotely associated with Rockstar as a spokesperson is Take-Two's Strauss Zelnick. And he's the guy out there saying, like, £50, $50 for Red Dead is a commercially accurate price. And I guess what he means is that we're still Rockstar / Take-Two and you will pay it.
Yes.
And I think that's what's going to be interesting.
You will pay it. That's the thing. Yeah. You don't want to, but you will.
And it's like with the GTA Definitive Edition, they patched it a couple of times, but obviously that thing launched in an absolute state. They used AI upscalers on the textures and everything. It didn't work. I'm very curious what state this thing launches in, basically.
Yeah.
I think the fact that they're showing it more ahead of time is a better sign, because the definitive GTA ones only got showed like a week before launch. Mm-hmm. And even then, that trailer was very carefully curated to not show gameplay. But yeah, the Rockstar of old for me are dead. I mean, Pinky, one of our regular contributors, sent in a message just saying, you know, does this prove that my editorial on Red Dead Redemption 2 being about the death of Rockstar is true? Obviously, I would say that, because I think that whole game is
true.
Dan Houser talking about the death of their old identity and everything. I don't put any stock in Rockstar anymore. I don't know about you, but I just don't care about GTA 6. Like, I'll get there when it arrives.
In my professional opinion, I do think that Rockstar has become, let me rephrase this, as I want to get this right. So Saints Row was always told that it was the mockery or the imitation of GTA when it first started, until they found their own identity by being completely over the top, and then they became the Saints Row game. Rockstar with GTA and GTA 6 are becoming the Saints Row of GTA, because they are in a state now where GTA Online has got flying cars, crazy sort of abilities, rocket launchers everywhere, these amazing guns that can see through walls, all this unbelievably over the top stuff. How are you going to take an audience that is now being fed that every single day and say, hey, in GTA 6, we're going in a different direction and everything's going to be stripped all the way back again and you're going to have to start from scratch? They are going to be fuming, because as much as a common rational gamer would think, yeah, fine, that's okay, a new vision requires a new starting point, we're not dealing with the rational gamers who make up the majority of GTA's fan base. I'm not just trying to speak in hyperbole. There are a lot of kids in there and a lot of people who do not see the value in anything more than I've got a gun and I'm going to use cheats. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's, yeah, that's true.
So when you're going to get GTA 6 and either it's going to be tied intrinsically to online and single player, you're going to be one and the same, that's going to be a nightmare and it will be broken from day one. Or they separate the two out, but they've realized quickly that the only way to make money on this game is to heavily bring all the elements over from GTA 5. So you'll end up with just GTA 5 Online again.
And well, that's the weird thing.
When does that stop making money at some point, you know?
Well, that's the thing. That's what's weird. Even Strauss Zelnick said they didn't expect it to go on this long and to do this well for this long and to still make, like, it's almost like $8 million a day or something stupid like that.
So how can it go on and make this money again? It probably won't. It just won't.
But I just wonder if they do separate it. Like, if you patch GTA 5 to turn that into GTA Online and you leave the campaign as a separate executable off the menu. So in the future, because we're 10 years on in October, it's been 10 years since GTA 5, and it's been in the top 10 charts the whole time. Do you convert GTA 5 into GTA Online because that's the same engine, and GTA 6 is then like a standalone, the new story, and that's what you buy?
Well, it's just
like, I don't know how the hell
mode.
They do it.
The thing is that if they just did a single player focused campaign, you and I would absolutely love it, because that would be fantastic. But at the same time, Rockstar would not make money off of that, because the amount of money that they put in to make the likes of Red Dead Redemption 2 was only supplemented by the money that GTA 5 Online had already made, and also the money they would then go on to make on Red Dead Redemption online. Mm-hmm.
Which so, they then sunsetted and got rid of because it didn't make anywhere near as much as
exactly. GTA
Online.
And doesn't that smack as a worrying sign when they just go, right, that didn't make £8 million a day, therefore it's a failure. So therefore, GTA 6 has got so much expectations on its shoulders that they will be running from day one to get as much money out of you as possible. They will be coming in like, do you remember when Fallout 76 launched and the only thing that worked on it was its store, its transactions marketplace? That is the vibe I'm getting from this here. I don't want to be negative because I want to enjoy my Red Dead games and I want to enjoy my GTA games, but I do worry that this is going to be a game that isn't made for me. It's going to be made for the casual consumer, the person who gets off on the explosions and having access to all of the crazy stuff straight away. It's going to be wacky, but designed by corporates. So it's going to be that, well, Saints Row reboot feel. I've just, it smacks of bad, this does.
Yeah. The thing that I'm fascinated by is the age groups of people playing it, because there are still so many new unit costs every day, every month for GTA 5. And it's like, are you buying that to play the story, or are you buying it as a ticket to online? Yeah. And then are you indulging in the stuff that you just said and having the quick thrills and everything else? And then how do you then stick around and form a gang and form the crews and use the GTA Plus monthly pass and everything and get lost in that world? Like, I think there's so much more user data that like needs to be out there. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting where they are right now, because it is this, like I said, nexus point for them as a company, and it'll be the first major Rockstar release, and especially the first major GTA since the first two that don't have the houses at the front of them. Yeah. So it's one of those where I think it'll be a big proof in the pudding thing. But all the financial data points to a release next year. So I think this time next year, we'll finally see whatever the hell that thing is. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
the UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. Thank you so much for having me, and it feels good to be back.
Yes, it's lovely to see him, and hope we might see him next week. If not, we'll have a lovely guest instead. For now, thank you all very much, and we'll catch you then.
Goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.